Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're watching a Highwire Media podcast. In the early hours of February 10th, 1999, a mother and son were driving down a quiet stretch of Pine Point Road in Saco, Maine, when their headlights illuminated something in the distance. A young girl's body was laying face down in the middle of the road, almost as if she had been placed there. The girl was still warm, but it was too late. She was gone. 15-year-old Ashley Ouellette had been a normal teenager, struggling, pushing boundaries, but also trying to turn things around. She had loving parents, dreams for the future, and no known enemies. And yet, within just a few hours of saying goodnight to her mother, she was dead. Strangled. Dressed, but missing her jewelry. Found miles away from where she was last seen alive. Her death was immediately ruled a homicide. But more than two decades later, no one has been arrested. No one has been held accountable. And what's even more disturbing, Ashley may not be the only victim. Was Ashley's murder a crime of passion, a calculated cover-up, or something even more sinister? And what about the young man who claimed to know who killed her, only to vanish without a trace just a few months later? Today, we're breaking down every detail of Ashley Ouellette's case, from her troubled teenage years to the chilling evidence that points to a known suspect. Because somewhere out there, someone knows exactly what happened that night, and it is time for the truth to come out. Ashley Erin Ouellette was born on March 29, 1983. She and her younger sister were raised in Saco, a town of around 20,000 people, located just outside of Portland, Maine. Their parents, Bob and Liz, were pillars of the community. They owned a successful realty company and served on multiple boards. Growing up, Ashley was known for being a warm, sincere, and caring person. She was also mature for her age and preferred to be around older kids. At age 13, Ashley started acting out, as many teenagers do. Hell, even I did. She smoked cigarettes, drank alcohol, stayed out late, spent a lot of time with older boys. Her behavior escalated, and she ran away from home. She stopped going to school, and her parents couldn't find her for weeks. They believed someone was keeping her hidden, and they were right. After getting help from police, Ashley was located at the house of two older classmates, Daniel and Steven Sanborn. Once Ashley was back home, Bob and Liz did what they could to guide her in a better direction. They took her to counseling and enrolled her in an alternative education program at Thornton Academy. By February of 1999, Ashley's behavior had improved significantly. She was toeing the line at home and doing well in school. Because of this, her parents began to relax the rules a little bit. On Tuesday, February 9th, Ashley was asked to attend a sleepover at her friend's house in Saco. Even though it was a school night, Ashley's parents thought she deserved a reward for her progress, so they agreed to let her go. Liz drove Ashley to Aaliyah's house, which was about a mile away from their home. She had no idea that her parents were out of town and wouldn't be there to supervise. At around 10 p.m., Ashley called her mom from her friend's house to say goodnight. Liz asked what they were up to, and Ashley said they were painting their nails. Ashley and Liz then shared their I love yous before ending the call. This was the last time Liz ever spoke to her daughter. 6 hours later, just before 4 a.m., a man named Michael Lopez and his mother were driving down Pine Point Road in Saco. As they neared the Scarborough Marsh Nature Center, they saw a young woman's body lying in the middle of the road. Michael later told the Portland Press Herald that the body was face down on the pavement, aligned with the center lines. Her hands were beside her, and her legs were straight out, he said. It was, quote, almost like she was placed there. Michael's mother called 911 on a cell phone while he got out to help the young woman. He rolled over and immediately noticed that she didn't have a pulse, and her skin was blue. There were no bruises or scrapes on her body, just a small amount of blood around her nose and mouth. She was dressed in a shirt, a sweatshirt, black leggings, and platform shoes. She also didn't have a coat, which was surprising given that it was very cold outside. The young woman's body was still warm, so Michael started CPR and continued until paramedics arrived. Sadly, it was too late. Local detectives soon arrived at the scene to investigate. They checked the victim for identification, but there wasn't any. Although she didn't appear to have any visible injuries, her death was immediately treated as a homicide. The state police were called in to take over as they were better equipped to handle the investigation. The first order of business was to identify the victim. Detectives checked schools for absent students, reviewed missing person reports, and spoke with people in the neighborhood. When that didn't work, they asked local TV stations to broadcast a description of the body on the noon news. The Portland Press Herald reported that it wasn't long before several people called the police station to say this description matched 15-year-old Ashley Erin Ouellette. At around 1:45 p.m., detectives called Ashley's parents. They had no idea anything was wrong. They were still under the impression that Ashley had been at school all morning. Detectives asked the Ouellettes to come into the station. Once there, detectives showed them a polygraph of the body, which they identified as their daughter. Bob and Liz couldn't believe that Ashley was dead. It was a complete shock. They immediately offered to put up a $10,000 reward, but detectives asked them to hold off while they continued investigating. That afternoon, an autopsy was conducted, which concluded that Ashley had died from manual strangulation. Aside from some blood on her nose and mouth, there were no other signs of injury. All of her jewelry was missing. She had small pieces of brown vegetation in her hair and a light gravel-type dirt on her slacks. The medical examiner further determined that Ashley had sexual contact before her death. Now, I want to pause here and note that I'm saying sexual contact because that's how the police worded it. They never explicitly stated that Ashley was raped or sexually assaulted. I have a couple of ideas as to why they might be wording it this way, but this is pure speculation on my part. They could have found signs of vaginal tearing or bleeding, which doesn't necessarily mean rape or sexual assault. Could mean a consensual encounter, but it does indicate that she was sexually active recently. They also could have potentially found evidence of ejaculation on her body, which would suggest she had intercourse within a certain time frame before her death. Either way, this is extremely important because as we go through the timeline, you'll see that there was only a small window where Ashley could have been sexually active and only a few people she could have been with during that time. The Portland Press Herald reported that while the autopsy was being conducted, detectives interviewed multiple people to establish a timeline of the last few hours of Ashley's life. When speaking with the Ouellettes, detectives learned that Ashley had gone to her friend Aaliyah's house for a sleepover on February 9th, and that she called her mom around 10 p.m. to say goodnight. That was the last time Bob and Liz heard from their daughter. Ashley's friend told detectives that shortly after Ashley got off the phone with her mom, a party started at Aaliyah's home. They drank alcohol and invited over multiple guys, including 16-year-old Daniel Sanborn and 20-year-old Jason J. Carney. Not long after the party began, Ashley asked one of the guests, Edwin Hernandez, to drive her somewhere. According to Edwin, he thought he was taking Ashley to her aunt's house so she could babysit in the morning. Little did he know, she was actually going to the home of 18-year-old Stephen Sanborn, the same home she had run away to in the past. Aaliyah told detectives that before leaving, Ashley said to her, "I want to go see Steve. When I get a buzz on, I get a crush on Steve." Now, just as a side note, Ashley had a crush on Stephen for a very long time. Back in 96 or 97, when Ashley was around 13 or 14, she and 16-year-old Stephen had a sexual relationship, so this was not their first encounter. At around 10:45 p.m., Edwin drove Ashley to the Sanborn home, located at 50 Mast Hill Road in a remote and wooded area of Saco. Ashley knocked on the door, but there was no answer, so she and Edwin went to a gas station so she could use the payphone to call the Sanborn home. When she called, Stephen's friend Chris Cody answered. She asked to speak with Stephen, but Chris told her Stephen was sleeping and didn't want to come to the phone. It's unclear what Ashley and Edwin did for the next couple of hours, but according to Edwin, at around 12:30 a.m., he drove Ashley back to the Sanborn home. He dropped her off and then returned to Aaliyah's house. Edwin told detectives he never saw Ashley again. 3.5 hours later, she was found dead on Pine Point Road, 5 miles away from the Sanborn home. Based on what detectives had learned so far, they decided to focus their efforts on figuring out what happened between 12:30 a.m. and 4 a.m., the time between when Ashley was last seen and when her body was found. They asked Daniel and Stephen Sanborn, along with her parents and Stephen's friend Chris Cody, to come in for questioning. Daniel told detectives that he had been at Aaliyah's party until around 11 p.m. He then went home and fell asleep. At 12:30 a.m., Ashley showed up and knocked on the rear door of the basement, where both Daniel and Stephen's bedrooms were located. Daniel said he woke up and answered the door. Ashley asked if she could stay the night, and Daniel said they would have to talk to his mother, Muriel Sanborn. According to Daniel, they went upstairs and Ashley told Muriel that she had gotten into an argument with her parents and that they had kicked her out. She needed a place to stay. Muriel agreed and said Ashley could sleep on the basement couch. She grabbed Ashley some bedding and then went back to bed. Daniel told detectives that the last time he saw Ashley was at approximately 12:45 a.m. when he gave her a soda. At that time, Ashley mentioned that the basement was too warm, so she planned to go upstairs and sleep on the living room couch instead. Daniel said when he went to his room, fell asleep, and didn't hear anything else that night. When he woke up the next morning, he noticed Ashley was gone. He assumed she had left during the night, so he went to school in the morning and then returned home for lunch. Detectives immediately checked Daniel's claim that he had gone to school that morning and found out that, of course, he was lying. He had been absent all day. When confronted with this, Daniel changed his story and said that he had actually slept in that morning and spent the afternoon with friends at Old Orchard Beach. It's unclear if detectives were able to corroborate this version of Daniel's story, but given what we'll discuss in a moment, it seems they probably weren't able to verify anything Daniel said. Muriel and Earl Sanborn, Daniel and Stephen's parents, also spoke with detectives. The state police haven't revealed what Earl said in his statement, but Muriel told detectives that she had allowed Ashley to stay the night after hearing she had been kicked out of her home. She said she gave Ashley bedding, then went back to bed. 15 minutes later, she heard some noise, so she got up to check. She found Daniel getting a soda from the fridge. Muriel asked him what he was doing, and Daniel replied that he was getting Ashley something to drink. She then went back to bed and didn't hear anything else for the rest of the night. When she woke up in the morning, Ashley was gone. Muriel didn't think much of it. She assumed Ashley had left on her own during the night. Stephen and Chris both told detectives that they were asleep when Ashley arrived at the house and that they never saw or heard her that night. Stephen further stated that when he woke up in the morning, he saw Daniel's bedroom door was closed and assumed Ashley and Daniel were inside still sleeping. He explained that Daniel would always keep his door closed whenever he had someone staying the night. Then Stephen went to school where he started hearing rumors that Ashley was dead. Now I want to stop here for a second because you were talking as I was reviewing this script, and this area is a little confusing. Based on different news reports, we assume that when Ashley called the Sanborn home from the payphone, Chris answered. At that time, he likely went into the room when Stephen was sleeping and told him that Ashley was on the phone and coming over. Then, before she actually arrived, both Stephen and Chris must have fallen asleep, if we are to believe their version of events. Detectives told Ashley's parents what the Sanborn family said about that night. Liz had a hard time believing that Ashley would have left the Sanborn home on her own in the middle of the night. Liz believes that if Ashley really wanted to leave, she would have called her parents or her uncle and asked them to come pick her up. She had done that in the past, even when she knew she would get in trouble. Now listen, I never want to second guess a parent because obviously they know their child best, but I do think that it's important to point something out. Liz also didn't think Ashley would be drinking at an unsupervised party at Aaliyah's house that night, yet that's exactly what she did. Teenagers will do things behind their parents' backs. So if we're being objective here, we have to consider the possibility that Ashley did decide to leave on her own because she didn't want to get in trouble and lose her parents' trust again. That said, the bigger question is where she was going and how she ended up dead 5 miles away. While the Sanborns were being interviewed, detectives searched Daniel's vehicle and noticed dry grass on the floor of the car, similar to the grass found on Ashley's body. The car was immediately seized and sent for examination. Aside from the dry grass, investigators found a gold ring, a black blouse, fingernail particles, a scarf, and hair. We'll come back to why these items might be important later. Detectives were increasingly suspicious of Daniel. They took his clothes and jewelry and gathered samples of his hair, fingernails, and saliva. They also obtained a search warrant for the Sanborn home. Inside the house.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Plus, detectives found an open condom and other signs of sexual activity. They collected various pieces of evidence, including samples of carpet upholstery, a purple cord, a bedspread, jewelry, and a stained pillow. At the same time the Sanborn home was being searched, officers went to Ashley's high school and asked students to come forward with any information they might have. For the next few weeks, officers returned to the school every day just in case a student wanted to talk. On February 13th, Ashley's funeral was held. According to the Journal Tribune, multiple detectives monitored the crowd and made themselves available to anyone who had information. A little over a week, Ashley's parents spoke to the Portland Press-Herald about their daughter. Bob addressed Ashley's behavior prior to her death, saying, quote, "We tried to do everything we could to get her back on the right track. We thought that part of her life was long gone. Obviously, it wasn't." Liz added that their biggest regret was that Ashley would never be able to fulfill her potential, saying, quote, "Kids are kids. We all go through difficult phases. We all take different roads to get where we are going. I think she was just starting to realize that she was okay. She never got the chance to show that to someone." The Maine State Police gave an update stating that they were still interviewing people and working through all the evidence they had collected so far. They wouldn't say whether they had any suspects, but they did confirm that Ashley was the last seen alive at the Sanborn home. By mid-March, police weren't making as much progress in the case as they had hoped, so they agreed to let the Wolettes offer a $10,000 reward for information. On March 18th, Bob and Liz, along with multiple detectives, went in front of all the students at Thornton Academy and announced their reward. Detectives told the students that they believed some people in the crowd had information that could help solve the case. They were hoping the reward would encourage those people to come forward. Now, as I mentioned earlier, when the Wolettes first offered the $10,000 reward, detectives told them to hold off. And there's a reason for that. Whenever money is attached to a case and can create issues, a defense team could later go argue that a witness only came forward because of the monetary gain. So if police can get information without a reward, it's always better. However, when they didn't get the response they needed, they decided to take it up a notch by offering the money. But they didn't just put the reward out to the community, they went directly to Ashley's school. They knew that if anyone had answers, it was one of the students sitting in that room. Ashley had been at a party earlier that night, surrounded by classmates. If anyone was going to slip up or share something they shouldn't have, it would be one of them. And I think they played this exactly right. At the end of May 1999, the Maine State Police provided the Portland Press-Herald with another update on Ashley's case. They had conducted over 200 interviews and had tested and analyzed a variety of evidence, including hair and bodily fluids, fingernails and fingerprints, scraps of carpet and upholstery, and clothing and linens. Despite all of this, they still didn't have enough evidence to reach the, quote, standards of probable cause for an arrest. Now, I'll hold off until my perspective section to weigh in on this, but for now, I just want you to make note of what was tested. The police wouldn't comment on what the evidence revealed or if anyone in the Sanborn home was a suspect. However, they did state that they were unable to place Ashley alive outside the Sanborn residence. They also made a striking statement saying, quote, "There are people who have direct, solid knowledge of what happened to her." By November 1999, Ashley's parents told the media that they were hearing rumors that people knew what had happened to Ashley but were too scared to talk to the police. Because of this, they decided to accept anonymous tips. Anyone with information could call their realty office during business hours. And they also doubled the reward to $20,000. By the one-year anniversary of Ashley's murder in February 2000, no one had come forward with helpful information. The Maine State Police told the Portland Press-Herald that they were still actively investigating the case, which they described as being very solvable. However, they were lacking the probable cause to make an arrest. They reiterated that while they had strong suspicions, they didn't have the evidence to prove their case beyond a reasonable doubt. Liz also spoke to the media saying that even though her husband was gone, she wasn't going to give up fighting for answers. Saying, quote, "I always have my eyes and ears open. I'm always looking for opportunities to bring the case up again." Months later, police reveal a possible connection between Ashley's murder and the 1999 disappearance of 21-year-old college student Angel Tony Torres. On May 21st, 1999, just a few months after Ashley was murdered, Tony attended a party at her friend's house in Bidford, a town that borders Saco. Multiple people were at the party, including Jay Carney, a close friend of the Sanborn brothers. At around 2 a.m., Tony and Jay left the party together to go to a store on the corner. A short time later, Jay returned to the party alone. He was described as looking upset and disheveled. Tony wasn't with them, and he has never been seen again. 3 days later, Tony was reported missing. When police spoke to Jay, he said that the last time he saw Tony was when they were at the store. According to Jay, Tony told him he was getting a ride to his parents' house or to a place in New Hampshire. Jay said Tony was going to be driven by a man in a red truck. He claimed he never saw Tony again. Tony's parents didn't believe that he just got into a truck with a stranger. They are convinced that he was murdered, possibly because he knew who killed Ashley Ouellette. They told True Crime Daily that in March 1999, 1 month after Ashley's murder, and 2 months before Tony disappeared, Tony was sitting at home watching TV when a news story about Ashley's case came on, and Tony immediately turned to his parents and said, quote, "I know who killed her." Tony's father explained, he didn't tell us who, but he said he knows who did it, and he said it in a way that left no doubt. After hearing this, Tony's father told him he had two choices. One, go to the police with the information, or two, keep his mouth shut. Tony chose to stay silent, a decision his parents now regret. There is no official connection, but a very strong suspicion. The Maine State Police have never officially confirmed that Ashley and Tony's cases are connected. However, they have stated that it is likely Tony is dead and that Jay Carney knew more than he admitted. Unfortunately, Jay Carney has since passed away. Tony's body has never been found, and his disappearance remains unsolved. In February 2001, Ashley's parents filed a wrongful death lawsuit against the Sanborn family. They argued that Muriel and Earl Sanborn should have contacted them when Ashley showed up at their house asking to stay the night. They also argued that Muriel shouldn't have let Ashley sleep outside the rooms of two older, sexually active boys. The Ouellettes stated they didn't want money from the Sanborns, they just wanted answers. Saying, quote, "We feel Ashley would be alive had the Sanborns acted like any good parent would have." They alleged that Daniel Sanborn sexually assaulted and killed Ashley inside the Sanborn home. The lawsuit also noted that the Sanborns never reached out to the Ouellettes after Ashley's murder. There was zero communication between the two families. In response to the lawsuit, Daniel Sanborn denied the allegations. The Sanborns argued that they weren't responsible for contacting Ashley's parents when she arrived at their house. Then, in May 2001, just a few months after the lawsuit was filed, Ashley's father, Bob, suddenly passed away from a heart attack. He was only 49 years old and had no prior history of heart problems. Many people believe the stress of losing Ashley and fighting for justice had taken a toll on him. A judge ultimately dismissed the lawsuit. No official reason was given, but according to the Sanborns' attorney, the two families resolved the case outside of court. Now, I just want to pause for a second here because this completely baffles me. What kind of agreement could they have reached? Ashley's family just wanted answers. Why would they drop a lawsuit? They weren't looking for money, so there couldn't have been a financial settlement. I don't see how this would have benefited them in their search for justice. So to be honest, as far as this lawsuit being dismissed, your guess is as good as mine, and we may never know the details. By February 2003, 4 years had passed since Ashley's murder. Police gave an update stating that while tips continued to trickle in, they still didn't have enough evidence to name a suspect or make an arrest. Liz told the media that although her husband was gone, she wasn't going to stop for justice. And then, in February 2019, the 20th anniversary of Ashley's murder, the Maine State Police gave another update. They stated that they had a, quote, "strong idea of what happened to Ashley." However, again, they didn't have enough evidence to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt. They have identified a very small number of people who were responsible. could have been just one person, or there could have been more than one. They aren't sure. People also added that based on the fact that Ashley was strangled, her killer was obviously quite intimate in their relations with Ashley, whether it was an acquaintance or deeper than that. Liz also spoke to the Portland Press Herald about how she was coping 2 decades later. She said she avoided thinking about what Ashley might be doing if she were still alive because it was too painful. When this time of year comes around, it puts a hole in your heart. It's a piece that's missing. As part of their 20th anniversary special, the Portland Press Herald provided an update on Daniel and Stephen Sanborn. Since Ashley's murder, both brothers have been in and out of trouble with the law. Daniel's convictions included assault, theft, drug possession, drug trafficking, federal counterfeiting. And Stephen, his convictions include DUI, drug possession, endangering the welfare of a child, theft, and assault. When they weren't in prison, the brothers reportedly lived with their parents in the same home on Mast Hill Road, where Ashley had last been seen alive. The last major update in Ashley's case came in early 2023. The Maine State Police issued a statement saying that despite a vigorous investigation, Ashley's murder remains unsolved. Once again, they asked the public to come forward with any information. So, I have a lot to say here when it comes to my perspective on this case. I'm going to try to consolidate my thoughts, so I'm going to hit on a few key points. One, of course, you got to start with a condom that was found in the Sanborn home. The open condom and other signs of sexual activity were interesting, but I'm not sure they are directly tied to the case. The Sanborn brothers were sexually active, and it's possible that condoms were already in the house, unrelated to Ashley. And number two, you got the timeline and Ashley's intentions. Ashley went to great lengths to see Stephen that night. She knocked on the door, didn't get an answer. She went to the payphone, called the house. And then she returned to the house at 12:30 a.m. and knocked on the back door. It's hard to believe she would go through all that effort to see Stephen, yet never go into his room to wake him up. It seems far more likely that she did wake him up, or at the very least, interacted with him that night. And of course, did Daniel kill Ashley? The most plausible scenario is that Ashley stayed in the basement with Daniel. Daniel made a move on her. She rejected him because she was interested in Stephen. He became angry and forced himself on her. And after the sexual assault, Ashley was visibly upset. Daniel feared that she would tell someone, so she strangled her. After killing her, he likely removed her body from the house, possibly with the help from someone else. And of course, why hasn't there been an arrest? Well, the DNA evidence might be inconclusive. There's probability that not enough to definitively say this person did it. However, Daniel's car contained dry grass, similar to what was found on Ashley's body. If they can connect that evidence to her murder, there might still be a way to build a case against him. So, finally, Ashley was found dead on February 10th, 1999, on Pine Point Road in Saco, Maine. Her cause of death was strangulation. If you have any information about Ashley's murder or Tony Torres' disappearance, you're asked to contact the Maine State Police at 207-624-7076. That number again, of course, is 207-624-7076. And there still is a $20,000 reward. So with that, let me know your thoughts and theories in the comments section below. Who do you think is responsible? And do you think we'll ever get an arrest in this case? Let me know. And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, your support helps the channel grow, upgrade our equipment, bring a new host, be able to pay them, and hopefully one day take this show on the road. As always, we'd love to feature episodes live from major crime scenes across the country, including possibly in Maine, to cover this case even more in depth, as well as take this podcast to California and try to do a tour of the Zodiac Killer's sites. And your support can help make that happen. So with that, as always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.